Our speaker this morning, Steve Wagner, is the Executive Director of Justice for All, an organization that trains thousands to make abortion unthinkable for millions, one person at a time. Steve has spent hundreds of hours interacting with abortion advocates on more than 30 university campuses in the U.S., making the case for the sanctity of human life. Frustrated by shallow stereotypes and disrespectful activism, Steve passionately works to build common ground in the seemingly endless abortion debate and make a reasonable and clear case for the pro-life position. He's debated professors at various universities and regularly trains students at Focus on the Family's Focus Leadership Institute for about 7 years. Steve is the author of Common Ground Without Compromise, 25 Questions to Create Dialogue on Abortion. He's contributed to the Youth Apologetics Study Bible and Apologetics for a New Generation. Those who know Steve know that he has a deep love for Christ and his word and a love for all people because they're created in God's image. He's a native Californian. Steve now resides with his wife, Rebecca, and their 4 children in Wichita, Kansas. So please join me in welcoming Steve Wagner.
Thanks, Steve, and so good to be with you here today. A few years ago, we had the Justice for All exhibit up on the Texas A&M campus. You can see a picture of our big exhibit there. This day at Texas A&M, we had a smaller version of that exhibit, and we had a lot of people gathered around having conversations. It was really energetic, and we actually had some protesters show up. And a young man had a sign that said, 70% of pro-lifers are men, and 100% of them will never be pregnant. Someone else had a sign that day, very common, my body, my choice. Now, I understand what that means when women hold that sign, but many times they pass it to the men, and then I'm confused. But then there was a third sign that day, very, very interesting sign. The woman holding the sign was saying essentially this: you care about the fetus before birth, but then you slash education funding after birth. So we had these people sharing their perspective. We appreciate it when they come and share their perspective. And then the Christians showed up. And they began a very, you might say, innovative form of evangelism. And I'm going to put strong quotes on evangelism here. It went something like this. How can you possibly be for abortion? It's murder. It dismembers a human being. You make no sense. The response was something similar. You're just a bunch of fundamentalists, you bigots, wackos, get out of here. We don't want to talk to you. Very productive. Now, at one point, the young woman with the sign noticed one of the 2 young men had a shirt on, and he was not wearing his faith on his sleeve. He was wearing it across his chest. K-N-O-W-J-E-S-U-S. No Jesus. And she said, think of your own master, Jesus. He said, do not judge, lest you be judged. So the other young man wasn't going to let that pass. He pulls out his Gideon New Testament. He opens to the passage. He knew where it was. And he did this. Read it in context. Read it in context. Right in her face. Now, did he make an impact that day? He did, didn't he? But maybe not the impact he was hoping to make. He made, I think, an impact for evil. Did he have a good message? He did. Hermeneutics 101. You shouldn't take a person's words, let alone the Lord of the universe, and use them for a purpose he didn't intend. That's a good message. That's a true message, but that's not the message she heard. She heard this one. I hate you, and Jesus does too. Now, many of us in this room hear this story. It's a true story. Many of us hear this story, and we want to be a million miles away from that sort of evangelism. We want to make a difference on abortion, many of us. I'm not saying everyone in here agrees on abortion. I'm just saying for those of us who want to stop abortion, for those of us who want to go out and share Christ with the lost, we somehow don't want to be a part of that. right? So we go to the other extreme. We don't want to offend people. We don't want to get controversial, so we just keep our mouths shut. So instead of being ugly, we get silent. Well, I believe there's a third option this morning, and I wish that young Christian man, he had a good heart. In fact, his friend came over to me and said, why do you even understand these people? These people are crazy, you know, this sort of thing. And we started to talk, and it became clear to him he didn't even know what they believed. So then I went over and talked to the young woman with the sign, and he sat there on the pavement and listened. And we had like a 40-minute conversation. There's a third option. And the Christians that day at A&M, I wish they would have taken note of this passage we're going to read today, Colossians 4. You can turn in your Bibles. I'll also have it on the screen there for you. Colossians 4, verse 2 through 6. Now, I'm going to just touch on this passage briefly today and say a few things about this and a few other passages. But Steve preached a message on this in 2012, and I encourage you to go back to that sermon to get a fuller picture of the passage and the context. I'm going to read from the English Standard Version. Continue steadfastly in prayer, being watchful in it with thanksgiving. At the same time, pray also for us, that God may open to us a door for the word to declare the mystery of Christ, on account of which I am in prison, that I may make it clear, which is how I ought to speak. Walk in wisdom toward outsiders, making the best use of the time. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how you ought to answer each person. Now, Paul is talking specifically about how we interact with outsiders, those outside the community of followers of Christ. He's saying we should walk in wisdom, make the best of the time. And then he gives one specific way to do that. Let your speech be gracious. Then he gives a picture of what gracious speech is like. He uses a metaphor, seasoned with salt. Being gracious is like seasoning things with salt. Back in Paul's time, salt was famous, not just because it made things taste better, but because it preserved things. Paul also seems to be saying here that if we make gracious, salt-like speech a habit, always be gracious, then this habit will help us know how we ought to speak in any situation with any person. So this is easy to say. It's easy to make a New Year's resolution about. It's hard to actually do it even once. It's even harder to make it a habit. I might suggest one way you might make it a habit in your conversations with outsiders is to start with people who are insiders. Maybe your own family, maybe your spouse, maybe your kids. Let me see if I can help with another question here. How many of you believe false things? Anyone believe false things? Okay. It's kind of an odd question, isn't it? Here's my answer. I believe lots of things that are false. I just wish I knew what they were. Then I wouldn't believe them anymore. Now, this attitude transforms my conversation. I can look at this woman who's defending abortion, which I think is the killing of innocent human beings. And I can say, I think she's mistaken about that. But I've been mistaken about a lot of things. So it's kind of like we're in the same boat. We're mistaken. We believe false things. We want to believe more true things. So I can look at her and I can say, tell me what you believe and why you believe it. And if it's helpful to you, then maybe I can share what I believe and why I believe it. And hopefully we can get closer to the truth together. You see how this is a different posture? Instead of it being a debate, a fight, I'm now shoulder to shoulder. This is a common project. We need to find truth together. It's a very different kind of conversation. It's a very different kind of conversation. There's something true about every person I talk to. I know actually two true things. They want to believe only true things, and they are not God. And indeed, the same is true for me. I only want to believe true things, and I am not God. No one gets up in the morning and says, I think I'm going to go find somebody to deceive me. No, everybody wants to believe only true things. But we also know, if we're honest, that we do have false beliefs. We want them to be illuminated. But I also know I'm not God. God only believes true things. He has no false beliefs. Not a single belief of God's is false. He's not mystified by anything. He's not confused. I am. And so that puts me really on the same page. We're actually on the same team, me and this other person. We need to try to get more true beliefs, and we can do it together. So I'm going to give you some suggestions today for how we at in the Justice for All community have tried to make gracious speech a habit. Hopefully this will give you a window into JFA's work here in Tucson and around the country. And before I'm done, I'll invite you to join us today for the Justice for All seminar here at the church. Even if you can't come to that, you'll leave here this morning with new strategies you can use in your interactions with outsiders this week. I hope you'll also leave encouraged to see that there is a third option. It's not just you have to either be ugly or silent. You can season your speech with salt. First, I want to acknowledge, though, that there are some people here who are going to disagree with me about any number of things during my sermon. I think that's okay. I welcome that. In fact, if you feel like an outsider here today, maybe this is your first time here, we welcome you. We're so glad you're here. And it's okay to think what you're thinking about my message today. I invite you to dialogue with me during the sermon in your mind. And then after the sermon, I'll be at the table in the lobby. You can come and talk to me face to face. You can also email me if you'd like to engage me in a conversation, in dialogue. I will do my best today to speak to you, if you're an outsider, graciously. And I hope that you'll return the favor. And hopefully, if all of us on every side of these issues can employ this kind of attitude, this kind of speech, then we can get closer to the truth together. It's this attitude of humility that transforms the conversation. And we've learned that if we use three skills, three basic skills, we call them our three essential skills, it's a way to put that humility into practice or on the street or in a conversation. It's a way to show it. So let me start by telling you about our first skill, and I'll tell you about it by telling you what not to do. So I was on campus at the University of Colorado. This is years ago, and I had a young woman come up to me, and she had lots of arguments for abortion. She thought I was mistaken, and I am telling you, I was ready for everything she said. I had a perfectly formed question to respond to everything that she said. I had arguments. And at one point she said, you know, you're a good debater, but if you're not going to listen to me, I'm just going to leave. And she walked toward the philosophy building, and I stood there feeling ashamed. I'm the trainer. I teach people to dialogue about abortion, and I failed to do the first task, which is to listen to them. Not listen to refute them, listen to think of my next sentence, listen to come up with an argument in response to them. Not listening to refute them, listening to reflect on what they're saying and to reflect back to them what they're saying and their value. So our first skill is listening to understand. You might just think about listening the way you want people to listen to you. One way you can learn to do that is by asking a lot of good questions, or we say asking questions with an open heart. I learned the importance of this at the University of Kansas a couple of years ago. We had a poll table up on campus. It just says, should abortion remain legal? And there was a yes and a no side on the table, and we put a pad of paper there, and we let people come up and sign. and I had two young women come up, signing opposite sides of the table. One of them looks up at the other one and she says, "Hey, sister, what are you writing?" And then she looks at me and she says, "She really is my sister." And one of them was saying abortion should remain legal, and one said abortion should not remain legal. So it appears they're on opposite sides, right? So we talked for about 15 minutes, and I asked a lot of questions about the timing when they thought it should be legal, the circumstances in which they thought it should be legal, whether they thought it should, was wrong, or whether they thought it was wrong and should be legal, or that it was right, or what did they think about, all those questions. And at the end of that 15 minutes, here's what I found out. One of them thought abortion should be legal only in the case of rape and when the mother's life is in danger. The other woman said abortion should not be legal except in the case of rape. I thought we were on opposite sides. But after I spent time asking them the right kinds of questions, I learned they held almost exactly the same position on abortion. And they were against almost all abortions, both of them. So that's the power of listening. The importance of listening is to not assume we know what someone thinks, feels, or intends when they say something, but to assume something else. Assume we don't know what they mean or what they think or feel or intend. And that leads me to ask another question. And I'm never very satisfied until I really feel like I have a full picture of what this person believes. How different is that than the typical thing? Person makes one statement. They barely get the statement out of their mouth. And we've already responded to them as if we knew what they meant. This affects my marriage. I do this all the time to my wife. I assume things about what she is meaning instead of bringing this different kind of heart, this heart of charity, asking questions with an open heart, trying to understand what she means. As Greg Kokel at Stand to Reason says, this is the sort of thing that should become a habit for us. There's one other skill I want to talk about briefly this morning, and that's the skill of finding common ground when possible. So remember what we're talking about here is seizing our words with salt. I'm trying to give you some practical ways that you can do that with our three essential skills. And finding common ground when possible is a very important skill. I was at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo there in California, and we had our exhibit up, and it shows pictures of the unborn before and after abortion. So it's graphic, it's controversial, and this young man came by and signed our pool table. Different pool that day. Should this exhibit return next year? Yes or no? He said, no. Started to walk away. And I said, why did you sign the no sign? Could I ask you? And he said, because it's an eyesore. I said, I agree with you. It's an eyesore. He's referring to our exhibit. Pictures of abortion, they are hard to look at. I can agree with that. What is that? Finding common ground when possible. I said, what do you think about abortion? He said, I don't really have an opinion. I said, could I ask you a few questions, specific questions, and see what you think? He said, sure. I said, what do you think about late-term abortion, like third trimester abortion? He was against that. I said, what do you think about using abortion as birth control? Maybe having 10, 11, 20 abortions in your lifetime. He thought that was wrong. What do you think about aborting a female fetus just because she's female? He was totally against that. We kept talking like this, and after a couple of minutes, he said, you know what? I guess I do have an opinion after all. You see, trying to find common ground, I was picking out particular things I thought he would probably agree with me about. We were both against all of those abortions I just listed, all those types of abortion. I knew that that would help us to have a more productive conversation about what? Our disagreements. See, common ground, I don't think we should use common ground to just sit there and sing kumbaya together. No, it's to discuss our disagreements more productively. But I'm going to pick out things throughout our conversation over and over. I'm going to say, I agree with you. I think you're right about that. You know what? That's true. Because that's going to show the person I'm in this common project mode. I'm trying to work together with them to find the truth together. Now, some of you may be uncomfortable with what I've been saying so far. You may feel like I'm giving far too much respect to people who have really ugly ideas. So let me speak to that for a moment. Am I saying that false beliefs are beautiful or intrinsically worthy of respect? May it never be. But the human being, even with the most disturbing views about right and wrong, and I come across them regularly, even the human being, even with the most disturbing views about right and wrong, even with views that have disgusting and evil consequences, this human being is intrinsically worthy of respect. If you take a quick survey of Scripture, you find it speaks very clearly on the question, who is valuable? And why we're valuable? Are we valuable because of what we can do? We can get really good at having true beliefs? Or because of what we are? Genesis 1:26 says we're made in God's image. We're constituted in his image. We didn't become in God's image once we did a certain kind of action or had a certain kind of functioning. We had a certain nature from the beginning. Genesis 9:6 tells us how important that human nature is. You shouldn't kill anyone who has it. Then Proverbs 24 says we should hold back those being taken away to death. And Proverbs 31:8 says we should speak up for those who can't speak for themselves. Why? James 3:9 says because we're made in God's likeness. That's why we should even be careful how we speak about other humans. Think about it, though. I can defend the unborn with such anger and impatience that I reflect back to the pro-choice advocate that she is not a valuable human being at all. Or I could treat her as a means to an end. Seeking another win for our side, seeking a convert, seeking a mark on my chalkboard in the sky, seeking to gratify my own sense of importance as doing something significant, more than seeking to minister Christ's love and truth to this other human being. Friends, a human being is nothing to be trifled with. We should not treat others in this way. When I'm looking into the face of another human being, I'm being given a precious gift, the chance to look at the creation, on the creation of which God is most proud. So the very biblical worldview that demands that I speak up for the unborn, demands that I treat the person with respect who thinks it should be legal to kill them. That's what the three essential skills and this attitude of humility will help you to do. To respect and love both the unborn and the person you're talking to. Let me see if I can put this into more practical terms, show you how this works out in practice. I was at Colorado State University. I was in a conversation with a young man there. We were looking up at the Justice for All exhibit. We have different kinds of exhibits. Some of the, you know, our big exhibits graphic. We have other exhibits that just show the unborn before birth, but in this case, it was our graphic exhibit. We were having a very productive conversation about that, and we had protesters that day. They were all wearing blue shirts, so I could see a couple of them in my peripheral vision, and one of the young women decided this was not my conversation with this young man. It was her conversation with me, and she began to tell me what I believe. So I began to ask her questions, and she talked over my questions, and then I started to talk over her. And I hate it when I do that. So at one point, I just said, wait, hold on a second. I don't think you even know what I believe. I really haven't made any claims here in this conversation. Could I have just 1 minute to make my case? Well, her friend took me seriously, took out her watch. I'm not kidding. Took out her watch, there's a crowd around, and she says, okay, go. Now what would you say? You've got 1 minute. Now, clearly, this is a different kind of situation than many of you will be in. Most of our conversations are very much a dialogue. They're very much about asking questions and listening. But in this case, I had to draw upon common ground as I made a 1 minute case for the value of the unborn. Okay, so I'm giving this to you as a model of something you could memorize, not so you can dump it on somebody. Sure, maybe you'll be in this circumstance, but probably not. I'm giving you this soundbite, this 1 minute, so that you can have your thinking structured and you will have something to say and something to bring up a question about in a conversation. This is just to give you kind of a model that way. I'm not suggesting that you unload 1 minute of material on people in this way. But I had to, that because the challenge was, I mean, the glove was on the ground, right? I had to come up with something. Here's what I said. You can time me. If the unborn is growing, it must be alive. If it has human parents, it must be human. And living humans or human beings like you and me are valuable. From fertilization, all that's added is a proper environment and adequate nutrition. So if you're an organism now, you must have been an organism at fertilization. And not only that, there's one thing all of us have equally that demands equal treatment. That's our human nature. Racism and sexism are wrong because they pick out external differences and ignore the underlying similarity between men and women and blacks and whites. And my concern is for your rights as a woman, that you can vindicate them against the will of the majority. But you can only vindicate your rights if you base them on your human nature. But the unborn also has that same human nature, so shouldn't we protect him from discrimination just like we protect minorities and women? Now notice how every sentence here really comes out of a heart of trying to find common ground and respect the person I'm talking to. I did not start with the Bible, even though the Bible is my authority. Why didn't I start with the Bible? Because I assume, just in generally speaking, that when I'm talking to other people, until I know they're a Christian, I assume they're not. So I started with science. I made a case the unborn is a living human organism, biologically. Then I made a case that there's one thing that explains our equal rights as men and women, blacks and whites. There's only one thing that adequately explains that, and that's the thing we all have exactly the same. It can't be our size. It can't be our intelligence, our rational thinking, our self-awareness. Our value can't be based on anything that's degreed like that. Our value can't be based on any functional ability. Because if you pick any functional ability, you're going to include some animals or you're going to not include some infants. I made a case from human rights, a common ground principle that I knew she agreed with. And in fact, she was campaigning there that day for women's rights. But women's rights only make sense if you base them on their human nature. And so I was trying to speak to her from that perspective, starting with common ground in every part of my defense for the unborn. You can as well. That's one way to season your words with salt. Let me give you an example of how one of Christ's community's own put these skills into practice. In the middle of last year, Jordan Newhouse sent me an email. She sent me an email that said this: "Tonight I saw a movie that made me ask myself the question, if I believe God's not dead, but the people around me will be sooner or later, what am I doing about it? This question made me think of the one you posed to your colleagues at Beefy's. I had read all three newsletters some time ago, but went back and reread them tonight. I believe I need to talk to someone tomorrow, start a conversation with a stranger and see where God leads it." I love her urgency in this email. I need to do this tomorrow. Tim, in his newsletter, suggested Starbucks. You suggested not going alone. My friend and I are going out tomorrow, and she suggested Starbucks. So all that to say, would you please pray for me and my friend that we would be bold to follow God's leading? I'm asking you in writing because if I do, then I'll have to update you. So it's for accountability. Now, the story of Beefy's on the Green that Jordan was referring to was very special to me. I had been sitting with some colleagues at this restaurant north of San Antonio, Texas, Beefy's on the Green. I love that name. we were a group of Christian friends from different backgrounds. Our common ground was that we did ministry together. So we were sitting on the patio. We began discussing theology. It started to get heated. The food was long gone by then, and we were still debating theology. It was becoming contentious. And at one point, I got a little bit fed up, and I pushed my chair back, and I said, I can't help but think that we're sitting here debating theology. Well, there's a whole bunch of people in that restaurant back there who are going to hell. I think we should go talk to some of them. So I stood up, turned around, and then I realized I didn't know what I was going to do. I took my water cup, and I went to get some water. And I walked by all these people, and my own words were ringing in my head. These people are going to hell. And I was trying to figure out how to start a conversation with someone, and I turned around, started to walk back out on the patio, and my friend John Mishner, who now works with Oklahomans United for Life, he's already having conversations with people. I walk out there and ask him what's going on, and he said, I'm doing a poll about who God is, and I've already talked to this table, and this young man came out, and we started talking to him, and then another of his friends came over. We had a great conversation about God for a little while, and we also ended up talking about abortion. So that's the story that Jordan was referencing. Really just trying to give a sense that we can go out and start a conversation, and maybe that might be the most important thing that we could do. So I was excited about Jordan's email, but I was even more excited to get excited by her next email. She followed through. She said this, my friend and I did go to Starbucks and talked with two people. The first conversation lasted only a couple of minutes, but the second was longer, about a half hour. I asked Kristen if I could sit with her, and she said I could. To dive into the conversation, I said, last night I went to see a movie with a couple of friends, and it got me thinking. I wanted to ask a complete stranger a question just to get a different perspective. The movie was called God's Not Dead. What do you think of that idea? Is God dead? Basically, her answer was that it depends on what you believe. You can choose what to believe, it will affect your life, but it can be different from what someone else believes, and it's all good. That's the sort of thing she kept coming back to as we talked about everything from how things were created to what happens after you die. It was a very interesting conversation with good give and take. I left her my email, so maybe it will continue. She did say she thought it was cool that I was crazy enough to start the conversation. What I love here is Jordan says there was good give and take. This girl would not have sat with her for 30 minutes talking to a stranger if Jordan didn't use the three essential skills and ask a lot of clarifying questions and listen to understand her and try to find common ground when she could. Now, this small act of Jordan's illustrates really the ultimate goal of Justice for All, which is repeat work. Or creating a different kind of conversation in everyday life. We call it repeat work because it's the end of a training program for us. It's the third step in a training program. She had to go through a very purposeful program to develop the skills that allowed her to be confident enough to start that conversation. She started here at Christ Community in a seminar that we call Abortion from Debate to Dialogue. You'll see some pictures that'll come up in a moment. So she started in a seminar, a seat work event, we call it. Seat work because sometimes you're sitting, but a lot of the time you're interacting. It's very interactive. I think it's impossible to fall asleep in our seminar. It's about 5 hours long. Today we'll be having one here as well. At 12:30 it will start in the Family Life Center. So she started with seat work, but then she went out on campus. And there you can see her with her sister Mariah, another JFA volunteer. Then she went out with us to a university campus to do outreach. And there she is. Go back one slide. There she is next to the person in the white hat. She's listening to Trent Horn, her mentor, on open mic. So she's listening first. We don't throw people into the deep end, but we do encourage them to then have their own conversations, which she did that day. Actually, go back one slide. You can see her behind the free speech board talking to somebody. She has a hat on. That was very cold that day, one of the colder Tucson days, I think, that you've ever had. I think that trip we might have had snow. In any case, she did a lot of feet work, practice. Over and over, she came out to campus with us to various campus outreach events. And then she also did some outreach at the Pima County Fair. And I may not be getting all of the places where she did outreach, just countless hours of outreach that she did to develop those skills. So how did she do that? Through this purposeful program that we call seat work, then feet work, ending up with repeat work. So lots of practice, and JFA's training program helped to make the difference for Jordan, but that wasn't it. There was this great support structure that she had of her family and friends, people here at Christ Community Church, the JFA Tucson volunteer group led by Paul and Cheryl Wilson, and other volunteers like Annelle Stevenson, and the support of so many others here at the church. So isn't it fun to see Jordan now deciding to work for Justice for All? And she's actually just decided to work for another year. She's raising support to do that. I'm really happy about that, and I think you should be too, because think of it. You're sending out one of your own to train Christians around the country to have these kinds of conversations. These kinds of conversations that change hearts and save lives. Yes, thank you. Justice for All wants to say thank you, Christ Community, for your partnership over the years. We're really eager to see it continue. Let me introduce you to one other JFA volunteer, Amanda Coles. She was 14 when she attended her first JFA seminar. She then joined the JFA staff for outreach to Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo. You can see her there on the right. After listening in on many conversations, Amanda jumped in and had her own conversations. And one of the last people that she talked to that first outreach event was a young woman. The conversation lasted only about 10 minutes, but Amanda asked to trade email addresses. 2 months later, the woman emailed Amanda to say that she found out she was pregnant. She was even pregnant when she was talking to Amanda, but just didn't know it. And because of her supportive boyfriend, the Justice for All exhibit, and Amanda, she decided she was going to carry the baby to term and give birth. So here's a picture of that little boy. Now, Amanda didn't stop there. She asked her parents if they could invite this couple over for dinner. And on a second visit to Amanda's family's home, the couple said they wanted the kinds of relationships that they saw in Amanda's family. Amanda's dad said that the most important thing in their family was their relationship with Jesus. And the couple prayed to receive Christ, to trust Christ right then and there. As Amanda puts it, how exciting that not just one life was saved, but two others were saved in a different sense and now able to enter the kingdom of heaven. Amanda decided she was going to do something about abortion, and God used her small offering to make a big difference. Now imagine thousands of followers of Christ like Amanda and Jordan going out into the world to represent Christ as his ambassadors, creating millions of conversations like the ones we've been talking about. That would create a different kind of world. A world where abortion is just as unthinkable as other human rights violations, just as unthinkable as slavery. That's why JFA's mission is to train thousands, to make abortion unthinkable for millions, one person at a time. Now, we've been talking about how to minister to those outside the Christian community by seasoning our words with salt. And JFA uses the idea of three essential skills to help with this. But there's two other groups of people that are often forgotten that I need to mention briefly here as we begin to close. If you don't have an awareness of these two groups of people, it's going to make it hard for you to make a difference on abortion or on any conversation where abortion is involved. You might remember Pastor Steve's sermon on the Good Samaritan in the middle of last year. He mentioned that Jesus purposely painted the picture of a man on the road to Jericho as one who was without clothes and unconscious. The passersby would not have been able to see who the man was, whether or not he was a Jew, whether or not he was worth saving. I'm putting quotes around that. That would have been the attitude of the people on that road. Is he like me? They wouldn't have been able to find out. Jesus was painting the picture of a mere human in need. You couldn't recognize the man. In a sense, he was hidden. The unborn is in the same situation. The unborn is largely hidden in our conversations about them. So in your conversations about abortion, you need to bring the unborn into the conversation. And there's really no better tool to do that than the EHD website or the new iPad app. And I'm going to actually bring it up on the screen so you can see it here. Okay, this is the new iPad app. You can see right here, you've got some tips. This is geared for pregnant women and anyone concerned about pregnancy, but it's 6 weeks, that's LMP, or pregnancy age. You have a child who's the size of a small raisin. So I get a size reference there. I actually have a heartbeat counter going, and I can hear the heartbeat. I won't be able to share that with you right now because it won't go through the sound system given the system here, but if you were to look at the app, you would be able to hear that heartbeat, and you can see the unborn, and I'm going to show you that heart beating inside the unborn's body at about 4 weeks, or 4.5 weeks. Let's go back a little ways.
113 times per minute.
You can see the heart beating, and then it's going to go slow motion and show you where the color changes. You can see the blood going in and out of the heart. This is 4.5 weeks, and look at how small it is, 4 millimeters. Beautiful, isn't it? I'm going to go ahead and go back to week 11. So this would be 9 weeks from fertilization. And I'm going to show you the unborn child at that point. You can see about 40 millimeters at this point. That's a little bit less wide than your iPhone screen. And here you can see the baby's face coming into view here. This is using a video technique called embryoscopy, contact embryoscopy. It's rare footage, but now it's been made available on a DVD called The Biology of Prenatal Development, put out by EHD, and that's distributed by National Geographic. And one of the great things about the video here that you can find on this app is that you don't need an iPad because you can go to ehd.org to find all of the same video on the web. And EHD is not a pro-life organization. It's science-based and secular. And raw video imagery like this, of course, isn't particularly sectarian or biased. So this, using this sort of imagery is right in line with what we've been saying about common ground. So I'd encourage you to use that in your conversations. At least know that it's something you can bring in. There's one other group of people that I want to speak to briefly here. And that is that some people here may not be that excited about these pictures of the unborn that I've just shown. They might not be able to look at it and say, wow, that's amazing, because you've actually experienced abortion yourself, or you've taken someone to the abortion clinic, or your life has been touched by abortion in some way. I want to speak to you briefly. Christ is just as eager to forgive the sin of abortion as he is any other sin. And I stand with you today in the same boat. I've done seriously wrong things. I blogged about one of them right before Christmas, or right around the time of Christmas. You can go read it on my blog. I've done seriously wrong things. And I stand with you as someone in need of Christ's forgiveness, in need of grieving over our sin, but also accepting his forgiveness. I want you to remember, though, Christ didn't save us because we were really good, because we functioned really well and did everything right. Christ died for us because we have intrinsic value as a human made in God's image, apart from our functioning. In fact, he saved us in spite of our bad functioning. Romans 5 says, "For while we were still weak, at the right time Christ died for the ungodly." In the NASB, it says, "While we were still helpless." You might think even helpless, like an unborn child. "For one will scarcely die for a righteous person, though perhaps for a good person one would dare even to die. But God shows his love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Since therefore we have now been justified by his blood, much more shall we be saved by him from the wrath of God." Now, I can't remove all of your feelings of guilt or remorse, and I shouldn't either, because they're important to point us to God. But I do want you to remember the first verse of Romans 5, which says, "We have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ." You do have peace with God as a follower of Christ. And this lack of enmity with God can help you find peace in your spirit. The final thing I'd like to encourage you to do is do what Jordan did. Go start a conversation. You have a few tools that I gave you. The 1 minute soundbite that I gave you, you could read that. You can go on the internet and find it. It's at the linked at the bottom of your outline. You can find that resource and then start a conversation. This week you can do it. You know how? You just say, I just heard this guy speak on abortion and I'm still thinking it through. I don't even know what I think about it. Could I share with you a little bit of what he talked about and then see what you think and maybe bounce some ideas off of you? That's not weird. You could just start a conversation based on today's experience. So I'd encourage you to do that. The unborn is a human being. The person that you might talk to is a human being and what value they have. So I encourage you to step out and try that. Trust God to be a strength for you. Let's go to prayer. Lord God, maker of heaven and earth, maker of the embryo who by the time she is the size of a raisin has a beautiful beating heart. We're in awe of your creativity. We're also in awe that you delight in us in spite of how much we fail to live up to what you meant us to be. We pray that you would go before us, prepare people for us to interact with about the value of unborn human beings, about their own value as human beings, and ultimately about how they can have peace and relationship with you through Christ. We're in your service. We at Justice for All, and I know our friends at Christ Community Church are eager to serve you. We're glad to serve alongside each other. I pray for each person here. Some of us need courage. We depend on you. Some of us need help with the intellectual arguments about abortion. We depend on you. Some of us are hurting from past abortion experiences. Maybe we're hurting from evangelists who yelled at us, people who mistreated us. We're hurting from seeing our failures of mistreating others. We depend on you for grace for the next person that comes across our path. Help us to delight in people the way you delight in them. We long to be ministers of your delight. We pray in Jesus' name, amen.